Season 4, Episode 22, A Draining Experience. It opens with the FBI in Fancy's office. Simone comes in, and the FBI wants Simone to meet with Lieutenant Shannon of IAB and say that he knows Joey Salvo and nothing else to see if they go back at Salvo with that information. Simone mentions, well, he didn't say anything to Martinez, and that didn't get back to Joey Salvo, so do we know that Martinez.
Martinez, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, so Martinez didn't say anything, so we know he's not on it then, right? And the guy said, well, we don't know for sure. And he's like, look, whenever we find this guy, I'm done. And the guy's like, oh, that'll be a good story. He's like, nope, I'm done. And then he brings out a written piece of paper, puts it on Fancy's desk, and said, I'm going to sign it, and my boss is going to sign it, and we're done. When they leave the office, Fancy said, he asked Fancy, could you hold on to that for me? And Fancy says, sure, I can even confirm the sequence and sign it for you. And Simone,
yeah, he goes above and beyond for him.
Simone kind of like goes, you would do that? And he's like, I do what I can. I guess kind of like a response to last episode when he's like, I wish you stood up for me more. And he's like, well, I do what I can when I can do it. When he's in Fancy's office, he gets the call for the meeting with Lieutenant Shannon, and then we have the opening of the episode. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice being Kyle, go through every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. We come back from the break. Sipowicz and Russell have a dump job in the middle of, like, a industrial area. The woman's body is around a bunch of pallets.
Yeah, industrial area.
They come up to this woman who doesn't look to be robbed or raped or anything, but definitely assaulted. It looks like she was strangled or smothered. And she has a bunch of substance around her mouth that kind of looks like foaming or whatnot. A radio car officer or a uniform officer says, well, isn't that the same for strokes or heart attack or something? And Sipowicz is like, if you figure she felt one coming on, so she came out here?
Yeah.
Russell goes to talk to the homeless man named Mo, who saw the dump job take place. Mo is actually kind of a famous face. Homeless man Mo is played by George Buck Flower, who was the homeless man in Back to the Future.
Okay.
Yeah, he was the guy that said crazy driver and then crazy, yeah, crazy pedestrian in the second movie.
So he really had a niche.
Yeah, he was well known for having a homeless face. He extorts money from Russell for the information. He's like, I don't have any money to my name, so she gives him some money. He says it's a white car who dumped her off, and the guy did not know how to drive stick. It was about 8 o'clock in the morning, and he then's like, I'm going to go buy some breakfast and bails.
He's out that mug.
Sipowicz confirms with Russell that it was a dump job, and she was smothered, doesn't look like rape, doesn't look like assault. We got to find out what substance is coming out of her mouth. Russell makes a crack, like, yeah, let's keep talking to robots to each other because we're upset, Andy. And he says, don't open a mouth to me. And then she fucking checks his bullshit and is like, I get it, we're all upset about this thing, but we don't need to be upset with each other because we can't do anything about it. And he goes, he just says the word no, like in agreement, but doesn't apologize. And then they bounce.
And it was very, like, 1950s, like, I'm gonna hit this bitch when he said, like,
don't open
raise
a mouth
to me.
I don't see Sipowicz as the woman-beating type, strangely, even though he's a little bit racist. Let's see.
Maybe. I see what you mean.
Like, I don't see him actually hitting a woman. I do see him yelling at women and being, like, verbally abusive, for sure.
That's okay.
No, I don't think that's okay. I just think it's one of his lines to be like, well, I'm not going to hit him, but I have a problem with her. I'll run down their story, then the Medavoy Martinez one, and then what happens with Simone. But when they come back to the house, there's some guy who's like milling around the front as they talk about the case. with Simone, uh-huh. who showed up, and they run down what they know so far, and Simone talks to the psychologist, and the guy's like, I'm here for Christine Lacos, which is the name of the DOA. I have reason to believe she'll hurt herself or be hurt by someone of her family. You should talk to her mom, or you should talk to her dad and her sister. He's like, well, you know, maybe she just missed an appointment, and he's like, well, I don't... He uses a lot of big words. I hated this actor. I'm going to say that from the beginning.
Oh, why?
I don't... Maybe it's because he's a psychologist who turns out to be a fucking asshole, but it might also be that he's like... He's trying too hard to seem smart, and it was really
okay.
bothersome to me, where, like, he keeps using really big words, and he keeps using psychological jargon when I know that a psychologist can, like, talk like a normal fucking person when asked a very simple question.
Yeah, but maybe, don't you think that maybe he's trying to do that so he sounds, was the word, so he, like, sounds smarter than them, and, like, he maybe he knows what he's talking about, so he can, like, slip in and get info and stuff, you know?
Well, yeah, he... I
thought he was, like, playing a role.
He's definitely trying to pretend to be the caring psychologist who has insight into her and why she may have gotten hurt. The psychologist essentially tells Simone, I think someone in her family may have hurt her, or she hurt herself. Call me with details if you can. Then I could, like, reveal my doctor-patient privilege. And even Simone, when he talks to Russell and Sipowicz, says he was laying on that privilege stuff pretty hard, almost as if he already yeah. knows something. He's like, do we want to tell him that she's dead? He's like, not yet. Let's go talk to the parents and her sister, like he suggested. When they go to her parents' place, it turns out they're, you know, old-school Greek folk. He's a plumber, and he's very direct, which I felt was kind of probably because English was a second language. At least that's what I thought. So everything was like, what do you need? What about my daughter? Explain or leave? Like, stuff like that.
I thought they were autistic as well.
They're not autistic, Kyle. They're just Greek.
No. He was like, I thought he did a good job of being, like, cold as a person. Mm-hmm. So maybe it kind of gave off that vibe that he is a cold, like, maybe he was cold to his daughter. But then when they finally reveal, like, oh no, like, something bad has happened, you get to see, like, he does actually, like, care and, like, really, like, loves his daughter and shit.
He does mention that he's a plumber, which, before they walk into the room, Sipowicz mentions they found out it was drain cleaner that was introduced post-mortem, so she was dead, and then they put the drain cleaner down her throat.
I'm a Swedish plumber.
Yes, it was an homage to Always Sunny, which hadn't come out yet.
Want to clean your pipes?
When they tell them to not contact the sister in case she knows something about what's going on, and Russell even offers to stay with them to make sure that they're okay. Next time we see him, they come back to the house, and the psychologist is already there waiting to talk to them. I don't know why, but Sipowicz jokes that Russell drives like a maniac because she got there first.
Well, wasn't she supposed to stay at the house to make sure that the parents didn't contact the sister?
But I think she got the implication that they definitely wouldn't anyway or something. So she's like, okay, well, I'll just head back to talk to this psychiatrist. And I called him... I wrote down in the notes that he was Dr. Thesaurus. He couldn't just say things people understand. It always had to be complicated.
That's what you gave the psychologist the nickname? Dr. Thesaurus?
Yeah. I wrote down his actual name and then immediately forgot it. Herbert Wetzel is his name. I guess he founded Wetzel's Pretzels. He says that she was suicidal because of an incestuous rape that happened that she had blocked out of her memory, which I thought, I mean, the episode kind of sets up that this guy fucking did it almost immediately because he's saying like, oh no, it was blocked, it was regressed in her memory that this happened and she was dealing with it and that's why she was depressed. When it was like, okay, so if I talk to her dad, of course he's going to say that never happened, and the family's going to say that yeah. never happened. So that was immediately red flag. And then said, oh, she was super suicidal. She probably took it out the only way she knew how, which was against that paternal figure. He's like, oh, maybe by drinking drain cleaner. And he was like, oh my gosh, that's so like on the nose. And then Sipowicz is like, and so she did this after she died, because we found out it was done after she died. And then he quickly changes gears to, okay, her dad definitely killed her.
Sipowicz keeps tripping him up because, like, Sipowicz knows a little bit more about what's wrong, like, knows more about her and has a bunch of info that he doesn't know about, mm-hmm. or hasn't thought about. So Sipowicz keeps tripping him up and keeps, like, getting him to basically, like, walk all over himself.
Then, well, Sipowicz and Russell go to where the sister works at the department store and let her know what's going on. When they get there, then they tell her.
I had a problem with that scene.
Yeah, maybe we have the same problem. What is that you said?
They get there, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to talk to the sister.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep trying to tell her, like, hey, let's go talk in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go talk in the back. And she keeps saying, like, no. And finally she kind of basically is like, no, let's just talk right here. What's up? And then they're like, well, your sister's dead. And then she throws, like, she, like, goes in this, like, big scene and causes this, like, big scene in the middle of the floor. And it's like, yeah, bitch, if you would have just, like, went back to the back, you, like, I don't know, I just was like, that's stupid. Why didn't she go to the back room? Like, why wouldn't she want to be in privacy instead of, like, being out on the floor? Like, I don't know, that just bothered me.
It was also interesting that... Because she was like, no, tell me right here. And then when she tells him and she goes to sit down, Sipowicz sees a woman trying to put on shoes and he just goes, do that somewhere else, and makes her move.
Which is like, well, if she would have went to the back room, you wouldn't have to stop this lady from shopping.
Yeah, but now we got it. I mean, that's fucked up. I agree with that. I thought it was fucked up that they do this in the middle of the floor and then she just bounces. Like, you know...
Yeah.
Of course.
She then straight up is like, hey, I'm gonna go.
Like, any time at work I had an issue with Dad, or with anything, that I was like, I have to leave right now, what I would do is go up to my supervisor, and I would say, hi, I need to leave right now because of A, B, and C, and they would say, okay, cool, clock out, or okay, cool, go. This woman does is, oh my gosh, this is so terrible, leave. Unless she went to talk...
How you're supposed to do it.
Yeah, like, she just bounced, like, immediately. Now, maybe we're just not sympathetic, or we're just assholes because we couldn't understand with her that she just needs to leave and be alone right now. But I feel like if you went to any normal person and said, hey, I need to leave, I just found out my sister was killed, can you please let me leave? They'd be like, okay, go right ahead. But
you'd be like, yeah, that's totally cool. I get it.
But just leaving, then they call you, you're in a crying fit, and you're like, yeah, well, you didn't say that you were leaving, we just thought something happened. But yeah, you know, dumb things.
Like, just give us a heads up.
The one piece of information she gave that was interesting is that she was raped 6 months ago by a coworker who then moved to a different state, and she was seeing this doctor to deal with that.
A lot of, like, heavy shit comes out.
It gets really weird and heavy because she says, yeah, she got raped. She didn't want to tell our father. She didn't want to cause any stress. So she never reported it, and she just went to a psychologist.
Which is always the smart thing to do, like, never report it.
Well, okay, I don't want to be the two men on a podcast saying, I can't believe these women who don't report it. She didn't report it because she didn't want to, like, do that to her father, and... When they talk to the psychologist again, and he really fucking fucks himself over, because he gets in a room, and they say, so, did she talk about that rape that occurred? And he's like, oh yeah, she felt profoundly defiled, and this and that. And then they're like, we're not even going to talk about the dad stuff, because we all know that didn't happen. So,
yeah.
We're going to talk about you, and what happened with you, and what you did. And he's Mr. Thesaurus Man again, and then there's a part where he's like, I'm not even going to ask for counsel, that's ridiculous. Then he goes into this...
Like a big dumb.
Yeah, like a complete asshole and an idiot. And he goes into this story where he talks about, like, his mom and this girl, and how they were profoundly defiled in their... sense of morals and whatnot,
and somehow like they're profoundly linked because they showed she showed up on, like, the ninth day after
his mom died. It was like she visited him 9 days after his mother died, and then the rape had occurred 2 days after she died. Yeah. And Russell was like, oh, that's some coincidence. And and then, like, he keeps talking, and then Sipowicz, probably dealing with the stress of what we will find out with what's happening with Simone, he's like, no, Doc, maybe you and your warped head decided that she got you stiff like your mother did, and then you just had to cleanse her with one of your techniques. And then he's like, this is ridiculous. And then Sipowicz, like, gets right up on him and says, you declined an attorney in front of a witness, Doc. You're not leaving this room until you admit what happened. So just save us all the time and start writing, and, like, put the pad in front of him. And I think he kind of saved the scene because I hated this actor. I don't know what it is. He bothered me. But Sipowicz, like, he's like, it's all you intellectual types. You got to come up with a reason, and you got to find a person to point at. And then you got to explain your reasoning about what happened. He's like, well, you're a sick twitch, and this is what happened, so write it down, basically. Then
he makes some comment about how, like, he's like, I know how murder works. Like, you do the murder and you walk away.
Yeah,
and he's like, but you intellectual types have to come around and give me reason. And he just, like, goes off on him.
While all that is going on, Medavoy and Martinez got a little story, which I'll only talk about for a couple moments because of the guy in it. A guy named John Highsmith, who's played by Leland Orser, who is an NYPD Blue alum as well as a famous face. He's been in a bunch of shit. Been in Seven. He's been in Saving Private Ryan and earlier episodes of NYPD Blue. But this was the guy that we did that impression of him because he was the guy on meth that, like, killed his buddy.
And oh, yeah.
He was like, I will only speak for my methadone medication. Like, I killed him because he had stolen my wake-up dope. Just his character was funny, and we kept repeating it.
I forgot about this. I mean, I just watched it, but I still forgot about this mini thing.
It's not very good. I think it was the writers of NYPD Blue, or, like, the consultants, the former cops, kind of letting out aggression. Because this guy, John Highsmith, he gets hustled out of his wallet, where these two kids, one of them pretends to be having a seizure. He gets the wallet to put in his mouth, then they beat him, and then take the wallet and run. But during the course of him filing the complaint, he turns out to be a pretty intelligent type, like the psychologist. And he turns out to be a writer for, like, a super independent magazine that said that the New York Police Department was, like, a third world country in terms of bribery and beating and whatnot.
Which, if you've watched this show, isn't too far off.
I would say that they took it to the extreme to sell papers, but I would say that there are concerns that...
Kirk?
Yeah.
They are literally doing a mirrored investigation into, like, a mob guy having connections in the police department.
Fair point.
So it's not that far off.
But I think he was talking more about the savage beatings, because he made a crack about, I think they learned how to beat up a man from inside these walls, and Medavoy caught it.
Oh yeah, and Medavoy being tough is super scary.
During their first interview, Martinez called him a dickhead as he left because of his job. They go to pick up Jamal and Warren, who are two high school kids that ran this scam, and they're acting like assholes because they don't think they can go to jail because they're kids. They do it all the time.
But Martinez could benefit from, like, maybe reading a magazine once in a while.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Okay. All right.
That's a good joke. You know it.
Well, I wanted to mention something else. Jamal is a slightly famous face. One of the black high school students is played by... I'm going to fuck up his name.
Yeah,
but
you are. Don't do it.
His name is Vasilis?
If this woke culture has taught me anything, just don't do it.
Vasilis Shannon. He was in The Hurricane, but he was also Kenan Thompson's older brother in D2 The Mighty Ducks.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
He was the guy when they go to Los Angeles. You know those street punks that are playing street hockey in Los Angeles?
Fancy knuckle pucks.
Yeah, they got overturned trash cans, and they're playing hockey in the inner city streets. He was the older brother of Kenan Thompson's character, and I knew him from somewhere, and thank you, IMDb, for proving me right. They bring him in, and they take a picture of them, which is illegal, and
yeah.
They show him the pictures to the guy and say, basically, hey, we can't take pictures of them, we can't confirm it's them, and we can't charge them because they're minors. Highsmith is like, oh, of course, your inaccuracies and your bullshit, and he's like, hey, asshole, we're letting you know that we did get pictures of them. We're going to try and get your wallet back, but what we are doing is technically illegal. And they get the confirmation.
Yeah, but why not just lead with, hey, we got pictures, can you look at this? And then tell him all that information.
Because they want to prove a point to the writer man. It's kind of like when, as I'm sure you're aware, when the gang at Patty's kidnapped that writer. And
yeah.
They wanted to prove a point. They didn't really prove it, but they wanted to. They now know it's them, Jamal and Warren. They talk to him and say, hey, can you help us find this guy's wallet? Basically saying, we know you did it. We know we can't charge you, but the guy just wants his wallet back for personal reasons. Can we get it? And they kind of, Warren. Warren was the one that was like, oh, maybe it was in this building. Maybe it got left there. And so they go and get it and give it to Highwater. I don't know what the point they were trying to make with this, with these bleeding heart liberal types, and not to trust the fascist police, because they give that guy his wallet back and release the kids at the same time so that he could see them, and the kids make fun of him.
And yeah, that was pretty mean.
And, like, he kind of gets into this impotent rage where he's, like, looking out the window and he's just, like, shaking. But Medavoy is, like, laughing. Like, ha, ha, oh, what a fucking ass. When it's, like, that, there's nothing funny. It's more of a conflicted, it should be a more conflicted situation.
Yeah, Medavoy and Martinez should, like, yeah, there should be some conflict between them because they're, like, yeah, we did our job, but then at the same time, like, yeah, I don't know. That whole story's weird.
Their job ends with them finding the guys and knowing they can't do anything about it. They went above and beyond their job to do some shit that's not technically legal to then get his wallet back so he can get these pictures. And they joke at him all the time, and they even make that crack where he's like, yeah, we took the money roll out of there. And he's like, there was only...
Yeah, they add insult to injury for sure. And they're being total douches to him.
And then when the kids get out and, like, laugh their asses off and make fun of the guy, they then sit there and laugh at him when it's like, I don't understand why you're laughing. Like, he didn't exactly get his comeuppance. His comeuppance would have been, sorry, we can't do anything. And then he would have wrote another... Yeah. He would have wrote another letter. You guys did above and beyond for him to get his wallet back because that's the nice thing to do. And then you insult him to his face by having the kids do that, and then you laugh at him, which is like, I don't know. It seemed weird. I don't know how to explain it.
No, I agree with you. Something seemed off with the whole way they handled it.
That's the end of Medavoy and Martinez, and now we talk about the Simone of it all. So Simone at the beginning of this episode was told he's got to meet with Shannon. He meets with Lieutenant Shannon, who I thought was one of Jim's brothers from The Office. Turns out it isn't.
It's not.
Yeah, he just kind of looks like him.
He ends up being a part, like, another NYPD Blue character later, I think.
Because the FBI thinks he might be the hook, he interviews Simone, and he puts it together like, hey, you grew up in the same neighborhood as Joey Salvo, the FBI are looking at Joey Salvo, you look up a plate that the FBI is using to look at Joey Salvo, do you know Joey Salvo? Simone's like, yeah. And he's like, did he ask you to do it? Did you think it was something else? Maybe like a lover situation? He's like, I don't have to tell you, Dick. And says, if you want my respect, don't treat me like a skill. And then bounces. Because he assumes this is the mole. And they're going to find their mole. And then they're going to leave him alone. So he's like, as soon as I get done with this interview, I can go back to doing my job. So he deuces out on Shannon. When he comes back, I believe, the next day, or it's either the next day or while he's working the case with Sipowicz and Russell about the psychologist,
It's while he's working the case, I think.
There's a bunch of guys in fancy.
He's not there the first day. The first day is mostly Sipowicz and Russell doing all the talking to everybody.
There's a bunch of guys in Fancy's office, and Fancy comes out and looks at Simone and says, "It's bad." Like, that's all he says. And he brings him into the office, and Shannon puts Simone under suspension and doesn't have charges yet. He just says, "We're putting you under suspension. You'll get charges when you're brought up in front of blah, 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 blah."
Dirty, dirty move.
They take his badge, obviously, and his gun. And he's like, we see you have a second gun on your list. And Fancy's like, I'll go with him to get it. It's in the locker room. So they go in there, and Simone is, like, pissed off. He's raging. And he's like, this is what they wanted from the beginning. Now they have full control because I don't even have my job anymore. He gives up the gun and then, like, slams the door, and then it cuts to commercial. The next time we see him, it's plainclothes Simone, leather jacket, black t-shirt, little stubble.
Smooth as ever.
Gina gives him some encouragement, saying, like, I know this is bullshit. Martinez and Medavoy ask if they could help, which they're like, no, we can't really do that. And they say, the FBI is in the interrogation room. Do you want to bring them into my office? Kind of like, do you want a little bit of my protection? And Simone's like, no, let's see what they want to play without you there. He goes into the room, and the FBI is like, man, I don't know why they suspended you so fast, but we'll promise we'll get you your job back. Simone's kind of like, that's not the point. Now that I've been suspended, if I get my job back, they're going to think I cut a deal. They're going to think I ratted somebody else out to keep my job.
Yeah.
He said, don't worry about that. We'll do some spin control. And Simone looks like he's about to hit that guy. And what's really weird, I never even noticed that there was a silent FBI guy in, like, every scene who wasn't...
Yeah, he's never by himself.
And when Simone, like, jumps up like he's gonna strangle this guy, the silent guy stood up like, okay, are we about to throw down? Because that's why I'm here. I'm the guy that... Yeah, I'm the dude that knows all the judo chops and the body throws.
I'm the Joe Rogan of this bitch.
I listen to a lot of his podcasts. I watch all the MMA.
He used to be a bouncer.
And now he's in the FBI. They said, now that you don't have your job, you should be able to snuggle up to Joey pretty easily now. And Simone is like...
The amount of time that the FBI guy waits for basically, like, not apologizing for fucking over Simone's life, to being like, yeah, but anyways, why don't you pony up to this guy?
And what the best part is, he ends with, like, it's your call. And he's like, oh yeah, it's my call. Well, I don't have a job or anything else to do. And I've already been pulled in super deep with this shit. That's why Simone, Simone laughs at him and goes, like, I knew you'd say that. And the guy said, well, it's your call. It's always your call. Which is also hilarious. The next time we see Simone in this episode after that, he's by the desk. And he tells Fancy, he's like, could I get my second gun back now? And you're like, uh-oh. Simone's about to put on, like, the cape and shit. Sipowicz and Russell come back, and he says to Fancy, he's like, you're not going to want to hear what I'm going to say to them. And he runs the entire story down for Andy and...
Well, Russell knows, kind of.
That's what Andy figures out about halfway through.
But Andy doesn't know, yeah.
But he explains, like, the FBI wanted me to do this. Once I did it, then they wanted more. Then they wanted me not to cooperate with IAB, and then now IAB's up my ass. So now I'm going to take charge of this situation myself. I'm going to fix it. And as he's running it down, Russell kind of chimes in with her thoughts. And then Andy's like, so she's pretty aware of everything that's going on then, huh? And Simone was like, the boss said I could tell only one person, Andy. And obviously it's going to be the person that I'm boning.
Obviously it's where I'm putting my dick at night.
it's not going to be the guy that gets super out of shape when I don't talk to him the way he wants to for a couple days. And then while they're in the middle of talking, Martin shows up in plain clothes because they suspended his ass.
Isn't that kind of weird? That was kind of a weird, like, coincidence.
He explains why. He says they have to suspend somebody to make the mole think that he's safe.
Oh, no, the suspension is fine and makes sense.
You're talking about him showing up?
Him being, like, right there at that moment in time. I thought that was kind of interesting. coincidence.
Because it's clear that Martens comes up and he's like, hey, could you explain to me what's going on now that I don't have a job? And whatever you're involved with has now fucked me over a little bit.
Yeah.
And Simone is even goes like, no, can't tell you anything, bro. Even though it's like, why not? Like, why can't you tell him something? Because this has kind of destroyed him, too, for no reason.
Yeah, it was kind of funny how they just dismissed him. But, like, Martens was just doing his job, too, you know? That's the other thing I don't think they're looking at, is Martens was just doing his job. He had no idea what was going on, and he couldn't, like, not do his job.
Simone is now fitting for a recorder. He's gonna go meet Joey, but record it himself so that he might be able to get out from under on all this shit. Andy comes in while he's doing that and starts offering his ideas, which are terrible ideas. He's like, you should put some stink on the operation to make it hard to use you so they just don't want to use you anymore. You should bring him in so you get the glory of bringing him into the office. And Simone is like, no, man, I can't make enemies of the FBI. I can't associate myself with Joey anymore. And if I bring him in, they're going to say that I brought him in so that I could drop the charges later. It just has to be this way. Sipowicz lets out that he has dealt with Joey Salvo, who is a real bad guy. He says a real badass who murders his cohorts on robbery so he doesn't have to cut up the pie.
Yeah, but Simone knows that.
Yeah, Simone brings up that he, like, caved in a kid's head when he was 15. So he's like, I know these things. Like, I just gotta figure out a way out of it.
Yeah, Simone knows all of that already.
Russell comes in to ask about it, and Andy says, yeah, that's his choices. They left him with what kind of rat equipment to use, because he was switching recorders.
It's funny, because, like, when him and Andy were talking, like, Andy was at, like, a normal level. But then as soon as all of a sudden he, like, gets crazy out of control when he mentions that, like, it's the rat, like, equipment and shit. Like, I don't know, he's all over the place emotionally.
Because we've mentioned it a bunch of times on this show where it seems like the show, one of the big themes is they look out for their own.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Rat Squad shows up, it's never, oh my gosh, what did you do wrong? It's, oh my gosh, what are they going to pin on you? Or, oh my gosh, what are they going to make a problem when there isn't one?
Yeah.
They have such a problem with rat equipment or the Rat Squad or whatever. And the fact that he has to go through this is something so shameful, because if you were to do this, you are now a rat. You're now a piece of shit. So the fact that he has to do his friend, it's also interesting because they prevented this with Vince last episode. They were like,
exactly.
Yeah, they were like, oh my gosh, Vince totally did something wrong. How do we cover it up so we don't get the Rat Squad in here and he loses his pension and all this thing that he worked for, even though we have mentioned in other episodes he's not that good at his job.
Yeah, he's actually pretty shitty at his job.
it's weird. The other weird thing that happens, after he sets up the mic and Sipowicz and Russell take care of that psychologist, Russell comes back in and it's just her and Simone, and he put the recorder on and, you know, they're talking and she's trying to add some comfort, and then, you know, she just propositions him for a fuck sesh in the bathroom.
Yeah, dude, it escalates so quickly.
Because she's like, go lock the doors. As he locks the doors, she's getting naked. Then they start, you know, making out. And then they pull into one of the stalls. Probably not a very nice stall, by the way. I would imagine that stall is fucking gross.
Very unsanitary. It's a unisex stall in the New York City Police Department in the, like, late 90s, early 2000s.
And one of the awkward things was we see her hands. So, to get graphic, boys and girls, it's clear that she is...
He put it in her butt?
Well, no, not...
Is that what you're saying, Kirk? You think he put her in her butt in the bathroom?
I think he just entered from the rear. I don't know. I'm not saying where he entered. I'm saying that she was presenting.
He entered in her rear? He entered in her rear. That's what you're saying?
Yes, I'm saying it was anal, Kyle. That's what I'm saying. And it was dry. And it was...
I mean, she was being a little bit anal about some things.
And anyway, the most important thing is that Sipowicz can't use the bathroom because it's locked. He tries to get in, and it's locked, and then he kind of listens and then walks away. But...
Do you think Sipowicz recorded the audio of that so he could, or Simone, and so he could listen back to it later?
Well, he said it wasn't on, but I also think in my mind it would be hilarious if it was on, and then whatever happens afterwards, like, they get the tapes and they're like, are you having sex with Detective Russell on this tape? He's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Are you fucking right now?
It sounds like you be fucking. And it sounds like you're fucking in the bathroom. You guys do not have a clean bathroom.
I'm sorry. Is she clocked in?
Oh my gosh. Did you fill out the proper fuck forms? Those are the 69s. Get up!
Oh my god. You're the worst.
So Simone goes to meet with Joey Salvo with the recording device. And when he gets there, Joey, you know, because he's smooth. He's a smooth cat. It's played by Peter Onatari, who is from Goodfellas and Rocketman. Not that Rocketman, the one with Harlan Williams.
Who was he in Rocketman? He was probably one of the
astronauts. He was the astronaut that was in contention with Harlan Williams that doesn't get it. And he's the guy that gets hurt.
That's right. That's right. That's Kevin Bacon's character or whatever. Bill Pullman's character or whatever. Bill? From Apollo 13.
The guy who doesn't get there?
Yeah. That's like, so in Apollo 13, what happens is one of the main three guys, I think it's Bill Pullman or Bill Paxton, I forget which one, he is like allergic to something. Oh, Gary Sinise.
Yeah, it was Gary Sinise. That's why I was confused. I was like, I'm pretty sure that's Gary Sinise.
Can't go. So Gary Sinise can't go, and so Kevin Bacon goes instead. That's kind of like the move of Rocketman.
Yeah, this other guy cannot go because he doesn't pass the test, because Harlan Williams keeps fucking with him. It's the comedy of the movie. But
That movie's funny. Stupid, but funny.
It's very stupid. I rewatched it as an adult, and it's pretty stupid, but there are funny parts in it. He comes up to Bobby, and he's like, man, What kind of job you got? You work that hard, and then they throw you on your ass. And he's like, well, don't worry, you got a job.
Even though he had him thrown on his ass.
Well, I don't... That's the thing. Is the implication that Joey just had it done? Or...
I think so.
That IAB, the guy who knows Joey in IAB, did it because he was worried that the whole operation was going to fall apart.
No, because Joey comes to Simone basically being like, oh, you're a stand-up dude and I want you to work for me. You know, so Joey thinks he's good because he didn't rat on him. So I think Joey's like, oh, I can pay you a bunch, you can work for me and do things for me.
Yeah, and he even starts to go into like, and what we'll do is not necessarily legal, and then Joey gets shot in the street.
Yes, he does.
Just in the middle of a sentence, boom, shot in the street and in the chest. And he goes down.
He's donezo.
Then Sipowicz, of all people, drives up and says,
A car pulls around the corner like crazy, and Simone pulls his gun because, rightfully so, he thinks it's...
a drive-by or something.
The person who... Yeah, something bad. So he, you know, rises up, and then all of a sudden it's Andy. And he's like, Andy!
Well, he didn't... he didn't sound like the woman...
Andy, is that you?
He didn't sound like it was All in the Family or some shit. He's like, Andy, what did you do? And he's like, I turned on Mulberry Street, and this is what I saw. What happened? And they start yelling at each other because Sipowicz is like, get out of here, get out of here. And he's like, what did you do? I know what I did. Like, they're screaming at each other. And then Sipowicz says, get rid of that tape, and drives off.
And not only that, when Simone is kind of freaking out, Sipowicz then turns from "get out of here" to "they got nothing anymore. Now you're free."
Yeah.
Basically, kind of makes it sound like he did it. He's like now they got nothing. Now you're done with this, and you can move on and go away and do what you need to do. And it's like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, he says like, now they got nothing on you, and he points at him. He says, "You better lose that tape." And he drives away, and Simone puts the tape in, like, a Dropbox or some shit. Like, I don't know if it's trash, but he puts it in, like, some weird Dropbox situation. Almost like
I'll have to watch it again. I wasn't really paying attention to what he dropped it in.
It was almost like a Blockbuster video return for all those folks that remember Blockbuster video returns.
Well, there's, like, ton of mail. There's, like, mailboxes on, like, corners and stuff.
And he then sits down, and the cops show up and tell him not to move, and then the episode ends. Because back in the day, seasons used to have real cliffhangers because people knew it would take a couple of months before you saw the show again. It's not like Netflix and shit where it gets all dropped at once and whatnot, and you binge. And the real question is, did Andy shoot Joey Salvo?
What do you think?
Well, I think because we know the answer, because we've seen the seasons at least twice. I think I've seen all of them twice. You've seen it more than that. I think it really kind of hammers the idea that he did do it.
Yeah.
It's really implying that Andy shot Joey to get...
to get this over with and get the apartment back to the normal... get back to normalcy.
But that's the thing that kind of goes back and forth with me, because as I watch it again, it's like... I would think Sipowicz would be smarter enough to know that if this happened, it wouldn't go back to normal. In fact, it would get worse. Because then you have Simone at the scene of the murder of the guy the FBI wanted him to look at, and IAB was having issues with. Like, I think it would only get worse if that were to happen. So it's kind of like, maybe he did, maybe he didn't, and that's the spice of that cliffhanger. We don't know. We don't know what's going
to
happen.
So if Sipowicz was smart, what he should have done was not pull up to it.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing that can...
Because if Sipowicz doesn't pull up to Joey and Simone, then whatever happens, Simone can give his tape as, like, evidence that he didn't do anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it exonerates him from anything.
The fact that Sipowicz drove up almost says, of course he didn't do it. Because if he did do it, why would he then implicate himself into this situation by driving up?
Yeah.
Because unless you really think Sipowicz is that dumb, which he's been doing dumb shit because he's been so stressed out and confused about what's going on. So it's a good cliffhanger. It's a good thing to leave you with questions.
But also remember what Sipowicz said to the shrink. He says, you know, I know how to get away. Like, basically, like, I know how to get away with murder. When you do the murder, you walk, you disappear, you just, like, walk away. He's like, but you intellectual types keep always coming back and having to, like, say stuff. Maybe he doesn't do it. Maybe because he does show up to it and he does, like, put himself there, he's not trying to hide anything, you know, because he has no idea what's going on. You know, maybe there's that something to it. I don't know.
It's a lot of questions, and those questions will be answered in Season 5, because this is the end of Season 4 of NYPD Blue.
Yep.
Have anything else to say about this episode, or the season in general?
No, it's a good season.
Yeah, this is when they really hit their stride, I think. When they got Smits in the driver's seat, they got everybody banging on all cylinders.
Yeah, a lot of the story is through Smits.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, like, they have moments with Fancy that are really awesome. Like, they have good Fancy moments, which I think he's underutilized. But, yeah, it's a good season. Good episode. Every single episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher. I guess it's Apple Podcasts now. I gotta get used to saying that.
Yeah, iTunes no longer exists, bro.
The Instagram is at AstroBrothersPodcast. The Twitter is at AstroBrosPod. It's mostly about when new episodes are coming out. Hopefully the next episode you hear is Binging with Ben, where we talk about all of Season 4 from a binging perspective, because that's how the kids do it nowadays. You haven't even met him, and he is part of the show.
Ain't part of my show.
Thanks.
It's the Asher Brothers pod. I don't remember Ben Asher growing up.
You're right. He's not Ben Asher. He's Ben Ramirez. And now you're racist. Thanks, Kyle, for showing your true colors.
One of them? A Ramirez?
Yeah, one of them Ramirez's.
There's so many.
Anyway, thank you for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. We'll be coming out with more as soon as we can, and keep watching NYPD Blue. It's the best show ever. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls, the last episode of Season 4. We got one or two more left with Binging with Ben. I've already set up the recording schedule, assuming it goes well and I can get it edited. 2 weeks from when this episode drops, we should begin Binging with Ben on Season 4. That might be one or two episodes, depending on how long we talk. If you need more NYPD Blue info in your life, and who doesn't, you can always check out Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. It's on Amazon for 99 cents. You can track down True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons by the creator and consultant. And you could also check out What Would Sipowicz Do?, a collection of articles written about the show. Super interesting. If you need the show itself, the best show ever, you can check out Hulu and Amazon. It is important to note that Hulu does not have the previously on NYPD Blues, but Amazon does. Believe me, it changes the experience, so choose wisely. Thank you for listening again. Check out the Instagram and the Twitter for when new episodes are coming out, but there should be one 2 weeks from when this drops. Thanks. Peace. Keep watching.